I said, death is an enemy. You struggle for life. And where life is taken in one form or another, you refuse to bow to that and you put up a good fight, because God is the giver of life and the restorer of life, and you look forward to the time when Christ returns for a generation that will never die. So that's, you know, dead is no option. Red is no joy. What was the third one you gave me? Well defended. Yes, yes, I do. But now, let me be very careful to not sort of be pulled into the camp of people who wouldn't, I'm not saying you are, but who would also easily say, you know, everything that we are is worth defending. I'm not saying that. But certainly in a situation in which evil and the fall, plus the sinfulness of the human heart, is everywhere, you, no matter where you are, you've got to choose to surround yourself with good schools, nice literature, the music we had before, right after lunch, the best medical service you can possibly have, airplanes that don't always come down in the wrong place, and the preparedness to make known how precious life is to you by being willing to put a fence around it. Because otherwise, you're in fact saying that life does not matter. Now, Jerem, I'm sure, will deal with, you know, the then following contention, well, isn't it ludicrous and insane to have a 41-time destructive potential in nuclear weapons? Isn't that overly well defended? Isn't that in fact insane? And I would say, absolutely, it is totally insane. I don't see any option to it at this point. The tragedy is that military weapons, horses and chariots, at this point have to take the place of the moral decay of our countries and the unwillingness to stand for human beings. The only reason we have to have such a radical potential destruction is because we are unbelievable in our resolve. If half the graduating high school class, boys obviously, in Germany are conscientious objectors and do not want to take up arms, you've got to have something that gives credibility. If so many Europeans, at least the vocal ones, are saying that our culture is not worth defending, it sounds awfully much like the Dutch did in 1938 when they said, we will have a Christian concern, we will be dealing with social problems, and that's where we pour our money. And the tragedy was that Hitler heard it. And in 1940, he took the country in 2 days. Now then, you know, Christians survived. Many Jews didn't. A lot of people went into the underground. Many of them got killed, etc. And only God knows all the relationship between all those things. But the reality of the fact is that, in a sense, the effort you expend in creating life is the same as the effort you expend in resisting death. And if you're not willing to resist death in all its facets, really life isn't very important to you. And if you say, you know, living in East Germany isn't all that bad, it's true, you could survive, they have television sets, and if you wait 5 years, you get a car, and there's no reason why you shouldn't wait 5 years. I'm not saying there's any advantage. I mean, any better or worse in one thing or another. In that sense, but the tragedy in the human soul, the government policy and the expression of that policy into every facet of life, that you do not have a soul. I don't mean something that gets saved, because of course you do have that, but I mean that you as a person do not have a soul. You as a person are not to have a private life. You as a person are not allowed to think. You as a person cannot know whether your child, your wife, or your husband will betray you. That's an atrocity worth fighting against. Now, of course, I could have said the latter in response to your question, but I wanted to say it a little longer. Okay, do come back for Jerem's session tonight. and then we'll both be here for the discussion afterwards.
About her work with Health of Child Incorporated, Mrs. Rookmarker has had a long association with LaBrie. Both she and her husband met Dr. Schaefer, I believe, in 1948. And Dr. Schaefer and Professor Rookmarker had a very strong association in the areas of particularly of art, but also Dr. Rookmarker was very interested in jazz, and he has written some very interesting books. However, Mrs. Rookmarker is going to talk on her work specifically in the Third World Relief with Help a Child Incorporated.
I'm very happy that I can be here tonight. I never thought that I would come to Australia, but I'm so pleased that they asked me here and that I can speak here about the work of the Help a Child organization. It is not connected with LaBrie, but because I'm connected with LaBrie, that's why I'm here. And, of course, by coming here, I hope to get more help also for the children in the third world. The Help a Child works in three countries. That's in India, in Kenya, and Uganda. And we have also a small children's home that we support in Zambia. Very often, I get the question, how did the work start, and why did you start this work? I think it started long before the Help a Child was registered in Holland. It started by Mrs. Schaefer giving me the books to read of Amy Carmichael. I think in this country, Amy Carmichael is well known. She was an Irish missionary, and she worked in India, and she worked with children there. I was very much impressed by the work that she was doing, so in my thoughts, I was busy with India as a country. And then there came a time that my children grew up, they were all in high school. My husband was always busy studying in the evenings, so after dinner, they all disappeared to their own rooms to do their work. And I was sitting there alone, and I thought it can never be the Lord's will that I'm sitting here and where I could do more work for Him. So I started to pray and ask the Lord if He would show me what He wanted me to do so that I could use my talents. Before my marriage, I had been a secretary, and I loved doing the office work, always. So I was very happy that one day, and very surprised also, that one day there came a letter to us from India, from a man we didn't know at all. He wrote to us that he had a children's home, and that he had and no money to take care of the children. So he asked for our help. And it was a very pitiful letter, so we thought it best to publish this letter in one of our church papers in Holland. At that time, there came many gifts for this man, but we found it better not yet to send the money to India, before we had asked for information about the man. And then when the information came, it was no good. The man had a big family of himself, and he had some orphans, but they all suspected that the money would go to his family. But then we had that money. It was about 20,000 guilders, so it's about 10,000 Australian dollars now. And we could do two things. We could send the money back to the people who had given it. But by that time, we also knew that there was a great need in India to help children. So then we started to try to get the addresses of the good people in India. And Dr. Schaefer gave us an address of a children's home in the north of India, that is the children's home in Bhogpur. And from InterVarsity we got two other addresses, and that is the Ramabai Mukti Mission. I think that the Mukti Mission is well known here in Australia. It has also an Australian council here. And the third home was the Bethel Fellowship. And with my slides, I hope to tell you more about these homes. After that, we started to expand the work to Uganda, because a student from Uganda was studying with my husband at the Free University, and then he heard about the work that I was doing for India, and he asked for help for Uganda also. That was during the time that Amin was not yet in power there. When Amin came into power, this man has to flee the country, and we couldn't get the money to the children in Uganda anymore, so the result was that these children were put into the streets. We were very sorry about it, and we couldn't do anything else than pray for these children. After Amin left the country, this man, Kefa Sempanji, returned to Uganda, and then we could start again with some children of that first children's home. We tried to get the children to Kenya from Uganda, but at that time that was not possible. So, but then I had to go to Kenya and see if somehow could be given to the children. I was very disappointed that I had to go back without that I could do anything for the children. But then after some months, I got a letter from the Africa Indian Church in Kenya asking for help for the children in Kenya. So that's why we started helping children in Kenya. And now I want to continue to tell you about the work that we are doing with my slides. Maybe you can put out the lights. Here it is. I start always with this little boy. This is a little boy from India. Both his parents had died, and someone brought him to the children's home. You see him here on the day that he enters the home. India is a country with an immense population. 750 million was the latest figure that I heard, and about 40% of these people are poor, and many of the children need help. In Kenya, there are not so many people living now at the moment, but the population growth is the largest from the whole of Africa. Just to symbolize this, I took this woman on the roadside with her twins. When I'm in Kenya and also in the other countries, I very often visit the huts where the children come from. And here we went and found this family here. The woman only had one leg, and every day in the morning she was carried out of the hut to the place where she is sitting here, and there she stayed for the whole day, and in the evening she was carried inside the hut again. The husband had no work and also no piece of land, and they were very, very poor. The boy had malnutrition, and they had asked if the boy could come into a children's home, and we agreed to that, so the boy is there now. Many children also from slum areas come into our homes, and here you see how a father brings his little daughter to the Ramabai Mukti Mission. The wife had died, the father is old, and he signs a paper here, and by which he gives his permission that the child is admitted there. When the children come into a home, they are very often very sad the first days, and you see one of the staff workers here from Mukti trying to make the child a bit more happy. And this is the same girl from the other slide. What kind of children do we get in the homes? First of all, of course, there are the orphans, children with no parents. About 40% of the children that we get are orphans. The boy you see here with the back to you is a boy that at that time was 4 years old. He was found at the roadside under a bunch of firewood. He had tried to carry this firewood and bring it to a certain place, and in this way had tried to earn some money. But he was crying, it had been too heavy for him. And then an evangelist passed him, and he went to the boy and asked him why he was crying. And the boy told him that his father was in prison and that his mother had gone away and that he was left alone. And then this evangelist went into the village and asked and informed if this story was true. And they all said that it was like that. So then he took the boy with him and brought him in one of the children's homes that we support. In that home, that's the Bethel Fellowship in South India, there are many children from prisoners. You see here a prisoner with one of the children. And the amazing thing is that the prisoners who have children here in the Bethel Fellowship are allowed to go the first week in January to the children's home to be together with their children during that 1 week. When the wife is still alive, they also ask the wife to come there. And they are there without any supervision. After a week, they have to go back to the prison. During that week, they get very good food, they do games, they do sport, but very important also is that they have gospel meetings, church meetings, of how you call it, with these people. And because this has been happened already for 8 years now, quite a number of these prisoners have come to accept Christ and are Christians now. And it is now so that in 5 prisons in the south of India, these people come together there in the prison and have regularly prayer meetings and Bible studies there. It's amazing because we never had thought that such a thing would come out of the children's work. Of course, what we want to give the children is, in the first place, of course, the physical care that they need, but also the spiritual care that they need. And therefore, we work together only with Bible-believing Protestant children's homes or Protestant people from these countries. And also, another thing is that we do not send away the children at a certain age, 16 years mostly, other organizations do that, but we keep the children in the homes until they have finished their training and they can take care of themselves. Also, children from the refugee camps in South India are admitted in some of the homes. You see here such a refugee camp, and the people who live here are for the majority out of Sri Lanka, Ceylon. They are the Tamil people who now are in great difficulties there. They leave Ceylon, and some of them still have the Indian nationality, so they go back to their own country. But when they go back there, they are unemployed, they cannot find work, and they end up in such a refugee camp. The children there are mostly very, very poor. Some have lost their parents, some still have them. But a number of these children are now in one of the better homes in South India. You see them here. Then there are the children of widows. We have many of these children. The husband dies, the wife is left behind with almost nothing, and she cannot take care of the children. Very often, when she remarries, then and she comes into a better financial situation, then she comes back to the home and asks if she can have the children back. Of course, we are always very glad to give them to their own mother. This is a little girl from Kenya. Her mother was an alcoholic, and she had four children, and she neglected them all. So also these kind of children come into children's homes. And then there are the children from the slums in India. This is in the city of Madras. In the town of Madras, we have three children's homes that we support, and most of the children come from these slum areas. This is a child from a hill tribe, and later on in this talk I will tell you more about these people. And then there are the very, very, very poor people who almost have nothing to live on. Like this family, this is in the town of Calcutta. This family has no home. They sleep in the streets, they prepare their meals in the street, they do everything there because they are so very, very poor. This little girl was found at the roadside when she was 2 years old, not 2 years, 2 days old, and she was brought to a hospital. And this is in the state of Kashmir in north of India. The hospital asked the children's home if they could take care of the child, and she's there now. This is a children's home, and in charge of this home are missionaries from the Indian state of Mizoram. They were sent by the Presbyterian Church of Mizoram to Kashmir to bring the people the gospel there. Most part of Kashmir is Muslim, and that was one of the reasons that they went there, but they also wanted to help the children there. There are almost no children's homes there yet. We started with a small children's home with 23 children. You should see one of the children here. And this here are some of the others. They had only a very small building, and we were happy that we could find another building for them to rent, and they just now have moved into that bigger building, and we hope that more children can be helped there. The Bethel Fellowship was one of the first three homes with which we started, and at that time there were seven children, and it was very, very poor. On this property, there lived two families, and the men of these families were child evangelists. They, but working with children in India means that you very soon have children in your own home because of no one taking care of these children. So we started with these 7 children and supporting them. At the moment, there are, I hope they come up. At the moment, there are 2,600 children that we support through Beto. Of course, they are not longer in one home. They are in different children's homes all over South India. And I think these children look so very happy here. But here you have one of the first 7 boys that you saw on that other slide. This man now is a teacher in a Bible school. He had a good education, and that's quite a difference with the time that he came there. He came and was there together with his twin brother. They were brought by their father. They went into the train to the place of Danishpet. That's where Bethel is. And the father was very, very ill. He had leprosy. And when they arrived at the railway station of Danishpet, he said to the boys, "I cannot go further any longer, but please go to these 2 men and ask them for help." The boys did that, they went there, and the father died that very night there on the railway station. Some people in Holland like to visit their children in the children's home, and of course that's possible. And when you go there, when you sponsor a child through our organization, and I hope that you all will do that, that when you sponsor a child and you want to visit it, you're always very, very welcome. The children, before they come into a home, have been undernourished and have been very hungry. So food is very important to them. And here you see a little boy who carries his plate and he's going to the dining hall. And this is what you see. Here is the dining hall. I'll try to get it a bit better. Yeah. The children sit on the floor and they eat with their hands. Normally they get 2 helpings every time with every meal, but when I come there it's a big feast and the children can eat as much as they like. And then you see these very little ones eating easily 4 plates full of rice. This Kenya, the children do not sit on the floor, they sit on benches and they have tables there. I told you about children in children's homes, but we gave other help also. This is one of the other help that we give, that we are helping with midday meals. We do that in 4 places in India and 1 place in Kenya. The children go to school, but when they come to school in the morning, they mostly didn't have had any breakfast at all, and it's not sure that they will get anything in the evening. So we send money for 1 meal a day for these children. Here you see a group of children waiting for this midday meal, and you can see that it's not only children that get these meals, it's also some very old people come there, because the old people are also very helpless in these countries. There are no social securities, so when they cannot work any longer, they get no food. So when they hear that there is a meal given, they always come. Once the children of the Ramabai Mukti Mission took these midday meal children and they washed them, and after they were washed, they got clean clothes from the mission, and these clothes we sent from Holland. We sent quite a lot of clothes to the various children's homes. This is on Sunday morning when the children go to church. There behind, you see my daughter. She was with me then on this trip. And this is the church. You see the women sitting on the left, the men on the right, and on the left in front, the girls and the boys on the right. Men and women always sit separate from each other. That is the custom there. And we keep as much as possible to the customs of the country. A Christian church you saw, and here is a Buddhist temple. You see many, many temples, and there is much religion in India, but it's a pity that they don't always worship the only true God. This is in a Hindu home where there is a little altar, and they have to do their religious duties in the morning before they start work there. That, of course, is not connected with our children's homes. And many idols you also find on the roadside in the south of India. Nothing helped. No, this seems to be the one. How do the children sleep? There is one slide I cannot find. It doesn't come up, but this is how the children sleep. This is in Kenya. In India, in South India, they sleep on the floor on mats because it's hot there, so they can do it. In the north of India and in Kenya, they sleep in beds. And also in Uganda. That's another one that doesn't turn off, I think. Yeah. Here you see a little girl in Kenya. She was very sick and people had asked us for help. She was sleeping in her little bed. And here you see the more of her environment. She sleeps there, and on the right, you see that animal. That's a goat sleeping there. As much as possible, the children help with the work that has to be done. And here you see one of the boys in a better home washing his own clothes. Washing in India is not always easy. As you can see here, this woman at the roadside, she just found a little bit of water where she could do her washing. Mostly in the villages, there is a well or a pump like here where the women go to and do their washing or whatever they have to do. Here you see in the children's home in Bhogpur, one of the matrons giving a child a bath. And here you see how the children help each other. During the summer holidays, there's in South India, in the Bethel homes, there's always a camp for those 2,600 children that we have there. They come in groups of about 80 children. They stay then 5 days, so after 5 days a new group is coming. And it's a beautiful spot. There are two waterfalls. These children wash themselves there. And during these camps, they have games, of course, they do sports, but also there is a lot of Bible study for the children then. And it's very often that the children here in these camps accept Christ as their Savior. In the beginning, I told you that I would tell you more about the Hilltide people. There is a children's home in Bihar, in the north of India, that we support, and most of the children there come from these hill tribes. And when I was there once, they took me up to such a village. This was the way to that village, and on our way we passed this woman with her little baby, and then we came to that place where these hill tribe people live. The children were very much neglected. The people, most of them, practically all, were very sick. They had fever, they had red eyes, and they never live very long. They die very young. And there's a lot of people who are undernourished. They only have money for one meal a day, and that is all. But when we came there, they had hoped that we were doctors, and it was quite a disappointment that we were not, so that we could not help them. But nevertheless, they made music and danced for us, because these people were all very, very drunk. Money for food they didn't have, but they made a drink out of the palm trees. They gathered the liquid from such a palm tree in these pots. When the pots are full, they let it rest for a time, and then it becomes an alcoholic drink. So they can drink as much of that as they want, and it costs them nothing. So that's why I think many of these people die so very young. And the children are very, very neglected, like this boy here. I told you, we support one children's home in the state of Bihar. This is one of the children, one of the first 13 children in that home. One day the husband went into the hills and he wanted to visit some people there. When he went up, he heard crying in the woods, and when he went there, he found two children. These children told him that their mother had died, and he knew the mother because he had been visiting her very often. The father died already a long time ago. And these children told him that they were so very hungry, but that no one would give them any food. So this man took these two children and brought them to his own home and his wife. And he decided to bring these two children up with their own children. But the next day they heard knocking at the door, and when they looked, they found 11 children there. These 11 children had heard that children were held there, and they told them that they also had no one to care for them. Their parents also had died, and please could they come also. So these people took these 11 children also. And I think it's so amazing that people do that. I don't know if anyone in Holland or in Australia would take 13 children in their own home. At the moment, when we started our help there, they had 80 children, and at the moment there are 260 children there from these hill tribe people. These hill tribes, they come there with wood that they have gathered from the woods, and they sell it here for firewood. When they come to that home, then they stay there for a whole day. They get their meals there, and also the gospel is preached to them. And as a result, there is in another village, also in the hills, from that village, many people have become Christian now. And I didn't visit this village, but Case did, my son. And he said that it was quite a difference with that other village that we had visited. You see here someone preaching to them. Because here many had become Christians, and that you didn't find any drunken people there, but you find people who are really hardworking and trying to earn their living. And also the children are far much better cared for than in that other village. These people very often go for seasonal labor to the plains, and we found them here in this camp. They were helping with the sugarcane harvest. They stay there in such a camp for about 3 months, but you can imagine what will happen when rain comes or when a storm comes, then nothing is left of the whole camp. Here you're back in South India, in one of the homes of Bethel. Before the school starts, they come together. And then some of the staff is reading from the Bible first, and they sing a hymn, and they pray, and then they go with their teachers to the various classes. When they come home from school, they have time for 1 hour to play, and after that they must make their homework. School is very important to these children, because this is the chance that they get a good future, and that is why that we do our best to let them learn as much as they can. But of course not all the children are bright, and there are some who have difficulties in learning. So the girls then mostly become, they learn sewing, and the boys become tailors or cooks or whatever they want. I myself supported 2 children, and one became a printer, and the other, that was a girl, very bright girl, she became a teacher. Also in Kenya, school is important. This is one of the first in Kenya who has nurses training. She was one of the first girls who came into a children's home that we support. She had no parents, was very poor, and now she is one of the first in Kenya who can earn their own living. We started later there, so that's why there are not so many children there yet. These 2 girls were grown up in the Bethel Fellowship. They both had teacher's training, and after that they went to Bible school. The girl on the left is now in charge of a Bethel home with 150 children, and of course there she has helpers. And the girl on the right, she's married to one of the managers of the Bethel Fellowship, and she lives with her husband in the state of Gujarat, and is in charge there also of a home with these children from hill tribes from the state of Gujarat. And of course there are many boys and girls who marry. You see here one of the girls on her wedding day. Leprosy is very often found in India. In South India, I have visited them in leper hospitals. In the north of India, they are living in colonies. You see here a leper patient. They are not accepted, these people, by the Indian society, so they cannot find work. They have to beg for their living. I visited one of the colonies there, and this colony is very near one of the children's homes that we support. And in that home, there are only children of parents who have leprosy. This is the children's home in Bhogpur. It's a children's home from the Reformed Presbyterian Church in America. And the children stay with their parents, mostly till they're 4 years old. But after that, they have to be separated. And many parents ask them if they can be admitted in this home. They have to be examined by a doctor very regularly. The doctor comes, and immediately when she finds some white spots, the sign that there is leprosy, then the children get medicines. And there were quite a number of children in the children's home the last time I was there that had to take these medicines. But after a while, then this illness disappears again. But of course, if it has been bad, as with their parents, and they have lost the hand, it doesn't come back anymore, of course. Here you see the children waiting for their turn to go to the doctor. These children see their parents one day a year. In the other children's homes, it is more often. They go at least 2 weeks each year in the summer holidays to their homes, when the parents are still alive, of course. And they do that so that the children still keep contact with the parents. Only when the parents beg, they don't send the children home. But in the children's home in Bhogpur, they can meet the parents one day a year. Then they are brought to a certain place. The parents come there also. And that one day they are together again. The parents come sometimes from very, very far. And they are not allowed in trains or in buses, so they have to walk. There was one family that came from Calcutta to this place. Now, in Holland, I always say that's a distance from Rome to Amsterdam, but I really don't know the distance in Australia, but it's very far, I can tell you. The Taj Mahal. Of course, you all have seen pictures of the Taj Mahal, a beautiful building, but just next to the Taj Mahal is such a leper colony. And we went there to visit one woman. She had two children still with her. Here's one of the children. And here you see the mother with the baby. She already had two children in the children's homes. And probably when these children that she has now with her are 4 years old, they also will go to Bhogpur. I find it always very sad that these people have to give their children to a children's home. They're not criminals, they're just sick people. And then they have to be separated from their children. Here you see a group of them together. Children without parents, children from parents who are in prison, children from leprosy parents, children from broken homes very often also, and all the children that I have showed to you. Building. Building you see at every children's home, because when a home has 100 children, then it's full and a new building is needed, and also repairs have to be made. So trick pictures like this you could take in almost all the homes that we support. There's another kind of help that we give. We call that supplementary help, and it's in daycare centers. In 8 villages in South India, at the moment, we have these daycare centers. we hope that we can have more of these centers in South India, because I think it's a very good help. The children come, the children still have their parents, they're very poor, but they still are alive. And these children come to this center at 7 o'clock in the morning, and they get their food there, they get their clothing there, they get their Christian education there, and they go to school from there. But at 7:30 at night, they go back to their parents and they sleep there. The children go to school till their 15th year, and then we stop the help. Unless, probably, we haven't had it yet, but unless, if a child is very bright, I think we will help it on them. This is also a sponsorship program. The other children in homes you can sponsor for $25 per month. These children you can help for $12 per month. The difference is because the children don't go to school as long as the others. This is Kenya, and we work together in Kenya with one church, that's the Africa Inland Church, the biggest black church in Kenya. Here you see a mother. She had four children and she very much neglected them. She was an alcoholic. And when we visited her, we were very, very glad that we could take the children and that she wanted to give the children to be brought into a children's home. The people who are in charge there are people from Kenya itself. We have 18 homes there, one baby home and 17 others, and the 17 others are Kenyan people are in charge. This couple had a home with 150 children, and of course they have their helpers, like this lady. She's a matron and she is in charge of about 25 children. Each group of 25 children has one matron or one warden. You see her here reading from the Bible before the children get their meal. After the meal is there the dishwashing, and after dishwashing they go back to school. You see that they have a school uniform, and I don't like that very much in these countries, in these poor countries. Very often the children cannot go to school because they cannot pay for a uniform. Of course, that's not so with the children in the homes that we support, but in the homes outside the children's homes. They're very poor people, and the children cannot go to school because they have no uniform. Also here they can play after they come from school for about an hour, and then they have to make their homework. On the property where the children's home is, you very often find also the church, you find the school there, and very often also a medical post. So you have a whole Christian community there living together. These three children we found when we were on our way visiting a child in a poor hut. They had asked us to admit in one of the homes. These children we found, and they were wandering around, and they told us that they had no parents and that they went from hut to get their food, and sometimes they got some food and sometimes they didn't. And also, sometimes they slept into a hut with other people, but very often they had to sleep outside. And this story also proved to be true, so then we could take them and bring them in one of the children's homes. This is a Maasai hut that you see from the Maasai tribe, and this hut case recently visited because one of the children should go into a children's home. You see one of the children here. And then Uganda. I told you already that in Uganda we worked together with one man from Kenya, from Uganda, who had studied in Holland with my husband. And when he went back to Uganda after Amin had left, he found back some children who had been in that first children's home that we supported. And he asked us for help then, if we would help these children again. And because we had been praying so much for these children, we were happy that a few were found and could be helped again. And also more children then. Most of these children have lived in the streets for a very long time. Find food, they had to steal it very often, or fight for it, or doing small jobs. And when you bring these children, who has been living so long alone, into a children's home, then really you don't have immediately very nice Christian children there. They were very dishonest. They were stealing everything that they got. They even stole their own beds and sold them. There were children there. We have given six times a new bed. But now they have to sleep on the floor because we cannot continue this, of course. In Uganda, we worked together with the Africa Foundation, and Kefa Sempanji is the director there. We found it better that for the finances and for the administration of the children, we sent someone from Holland there. So you see in the middle of this a Dutch girl, that's Herma Oostenbrink. She works there already for 3 years now, and she is in charge of these children's homes. She supervises them all. But most important for us is that she takes care of the money that we send, so that we know that this is spent in an honest way. Here is one of the 10 children's homes that we support there. It's on a farm. It's a very beautiful spot. And I think we already have something accomplished there, although they are not ideal homes yet. But now most of the children go regularly to school. In the beginning, it was almost impossible to get these children in school. And I think we made a mistake in the beginning, because Kefa Sempangi, he is a wonderful man, really. He went into the streets at night when it was dangerous there. There's a lot of shooting at night still in Uganda. But he went into the streets, and when he found a child sleeping there with no home, then he took the child and brought it in a home in one building. So at a certain time, we had 260 of these children in one building. And that was impossible. So they were stealing, and at the moment, the last time I visited there, before we had them divided into small homes, there really was nothing left in that home. Everything was stolen and sold. So now we have them in small homes, and that helps. The children go regularly to school now, and Kees has a room also in one of the homes, that's this home. And when he left Uganda a half year before, he appointed two people to take charge to help the children. That was one older boy from the first children's home. He had become a real Christian, and a nurse from Uganda. When he came back after half a year, the situation was still very good. And I think that's an encouragement for us, that something really is done for these children now, although it's not ideal yet. Very often you find children at your doorstep in Uganda, and of course they have to be admitted. It's a grim country. There is a lot of shooting. in the evenings you cannot go into the streets of Kampala, it's dangerous. The soldiers almost get no pay, so they have to take care of themselves. And then there are the guerrillas. There's a lot of fighting. And we already had two raids on two children's homes. Then the children ran away, and then they all went to Kefa. But when they go back there, the whole place is empty. There's nothing left. Everything is stolen there. But the children happily are still alive. Then I bring you to a baby home in Kenya that is run by a nurse from Scotland, Katie McKinnon. She's in charge there of that baby home. And here you see one of the babies when it came. It's not exactly a baby, it's a girl 2 years old. When she came, the doctors did not give any hope that she would live. But after a while, this picture could be taken from the same girl. At the beginning of 1984, Katie had 25 babies in her home. But then the drought became, the famine became so terrible in that area of Kenya that she had to take in more children and more children. Here you see her. On the right is Katie McKinnon. And by the end of 1984, she had about 80 babies taken where she took care of, and she fed 500 people outside her home. We were very happy that we could send her the money for all this so that she had no financial problems. But nevertheless, she had many other problems. Here you see Katie with a very, very sick child. And you see the babies here. There were 80 then. Of course, she doesn't take care of them alone. She has the help of 12 girls from Kenya, and she teaches them what to do, and also she gives them lessons in English. Oh, what you saw was a water well. Doesn't come back. Yeah. Because the famine was so bad, we sent money for 4 of these wells and also for a pump, and we moved the children's home to another place in the city of Kitui, and sometimes water from the tap came, but not very often. Here you see how the babies sleep there. During the famine there were about four or five babies sleeping in one bed. Then I will take you to India again for my last ride. When I was on a trip in India, I got a letter from someone who was in charge of a children's home, and she asked me to come because there were so many underfed children in that home. It was a home that was run by an American lady, and she got money from an American Christian organization. But the lady had died. Someone else had taken over. And when she came there, she found the children so underfed. You can see it here on this slide. The girl on the left, the Japanese girl, was 4 years when we came there. She was with us. The other two girls are 14 and 16 years old. It was an awful situation. The lady in red there, that was the one who wrote me that letter. They had asked her to take over. And when she came there, she really didn't know what to do. You see her son, the big boy there on the left, he was at that time 12 years old, and most of these children were older. I found 56 of these children there, and I didn't know what to do. Of course, we were crying there, but that didn't help the children very much. And then I thought, sending help here, I was not certain that the money would be used for the children. So I didn't dare to do that. I went back to the Bethel Fellowship in South India, and that's in the same language area. So I told the story there, and they said, if you can send us the finances for it, we will take care, we will go there and pick up the children and bring them all here. And I'm really very, very, very grateful that they did. Half of the children immediately had to go into a hospital, and the doctor said that none of these children would live, but they did. They have been cared for with so much love and so much care, and 2 years later I could take this this picture of these same children. You cannot see that they are still too small, but they are here on this picture. But 2 years later, another picture I could take of two of these children. And they're all now with the other children again. They all go to school, and they are just very, very happy in this home. And I'm grateful that these people, because they love the Lord and because they want to help their neighbors, that they were able to take care of these children. And with a lot of sacrifice, I can tell you, they have brought up these children, and they are happy now there. This is my last slide. This is the baby department in Uganda. And I hope that I have given you an idea of the work of Help a Child that we do. Of course, I hope to get help from you also. On somewhere there, on the back, we have some literature there, and you can take it free. Thank you. I don't know if you want to ask questions. You also can come to me if you want that, and then I can tell you more maybe. Where in South India? All over. If you go there, there are little booklets with maps of India and Kenya and Uganda, and you can see where the children's homes are.